We'll move into the executive committee. I'm going to mention one little information item before we do that, because Bruce Schulte is still here. The work of the strategic planning committee, the five-year committee, is ongoing, and Bruce has been heading that up, and I think it's good for the board to know that there is a group on campus that is diligently bringing ideas forward as to how we can revamp our 10-year strategic plan in midstream. And a lot of that is in preparation for our SACS reaccreditation, which looms large in 2025, I believe. So, anyway, Bruce, thanks for being here. We have other information items, and our athletic director, Todd Stewart, is with us today. I hope ready to give us a progress report on our academics in the athletic department.
Happy to. I didn't want to cut in front of Andrea. She was ahead of me on the sheet, so. But happy.
Well, she's happy. Not on my sheet.
That's all right. That's good. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be with you and talk a little bit about the academic progress of our athletes. We do take the term student-athlete literally and take it very seriously. And so what I'll show you here in a second are the APR numbers that we have, not to get lost in the details, but just to explain how that is tabulated. So the easiest way to explain it is it's a team score. It's not an individual score, but each individual accrues points. And so each semester, there are 2 points on the line. One, if you're eligible, and two, if you remain in school. So over a normal year with two semesters, there's a possibility of getting 4 points. If you are eligible, but you drop out of school, you lose a point. If you're not eligible, but you stay in school, you lose a point. And the worst case scenario is if you're not eligible and you drop out of school, then you lose either 2 points or even 3 points in some situations. If you are eligible and remain in school each semester and then ultimately graduate, then you would become a 4-for-4 every year that you're in the system. So that's a lot of numbers there, I know. But what it means is, obviously, there's a numerator and a denominator. A 4-for-4 is 1,000. 3-for-4 is 750, which is bad, the way this is tabulated. A 2-for-4 is 500, which is really bad. A 1-for-4 is a 250, which is terrible, and a 0-for-4 is awful. So it's a pretty good threshold in terms of measuring the academic progress of athletes. So what I would tell you is, before I go to the next slide, NCAA rules stipulate that a team's multi-year score, and that's a four-year number. So you have, obviously, each year you get a score. Your multi-year score as a program has to be 930 or higher. If it's not, you are not eligible to participate in postseason tournaments. So a bowl game, NCAA tournament, any postseason tournament, you couldn't go if your multi-year score is below a 930. And then depending on how far below it is, you can also lose scholarships as well. So it's a meaningful metric, and obviously there's consequences if you don't meet it. So what I'd like to point out here is, if you look at the right-hand column first, that's the most recent year that was measured, which was last year, the 2021-2022 year, because we're still in the 2022-2023 year. And what I'm really proud of for our athletes and our coaches is, if you look at those numbers, 11 of our 14 programs have a perfect 1,000 score. That's really extraordinary. In football, who has a 989, the number in parentheses is the number of athletes that are tabulated. Football has a 989, and for a sample size that large, with the demographics as diverse as a football program, 989 is phenomenal. I mean, Tyson Helton, his staff, and our players, you know, take this very seriously. The column on the left is what I refer to. That's the multi-year rate, so that's the average over a four-year period. And again, you have to have a 930 or higher, and you see that all of those are in really, really good position. Cross-country, men's cross-country would be the only one. And that's a tough one, because there's a much smaller sample size there. And so in that instance, we had one student athlete who didn't do well and left school, who lost multiple points. And so when you're only dealing with a sample size of 15, there's very, very little margin for error there. But, you know, I think the overall numbers, the multi-year rates, are excellent, but trending even better, because the right-hand column is is really good. And then the number at the bottom, student athlete graduation success rate, that is a similar but separate metric that the NCAA uses. And the way that's tabulated is for every student athlete, if they, from the minute they enroll in school, if they graduate within 6 years, or if they transfer to another school in good academic standing, or if somebody transfers in and graduates, then that's considered successful. And so 87% of our athletes meet that. Again, that's a very high number. And you know what I would just add to that is, obviously, they're true student athletes, but they're excellent in their sport as well. I mean, these are the numbers since we entered Conference USA. We've won 9 more championships than every other program. 9 different sport programs have contributed to this. And you know, look, nine of the schools in the league have 13 or less. You know, basically almost a third of what we have. And what I would conclude with is not to get into a budget matter, but I just think you should know, and we've talked about this before, that this is the 14 schools that were on that last chart. We're 13th of the 14 in overall budget. Only 12 have a student fee. 2 of the schools don't do a student fee, but we're 11th of the 12 who have a student fee. So it's not about me in any way, shape, or form. It's about our coaches and our athletes. But you should just know how good our coaches are at managing the resources they have, that they recruit true student athletes, and just how dedicated our athletes are to perform both in the classroom and on the field of play.
If I could add, there are, at a university, there are frequent questions around why athletics, what does it bring to the institution? And we talk about many things that athletics brings. Visibility brings student engagement, alumni engagement. But one of the things it does here, particularly well at WKU, is it gives young people an opportunity to go to college that otherwise might not. And from a variety of backgrounds, and the success that we create with those students is an exemplar for our university. That our graduation rate, not retention rate, is 87%. There is almost no other organization at this university that creates that kind of student success. There are resources obviously invested in it, tremendous supports that are created, but on the flip side, these are remarkable young people with talents inside and outside of the classroom that are disciplined, that perform on a high level athletically, and perform as students. And so for all of the things that it does, the thing that I'm most proud of is that our young people come, they compete, and most importantly, they graduate.
Very good. Any other comments or questions for Todd, Chang?
I'm curious about how the NCAA are going studying on how difficult the impact on these rates from the new transfer rules, everything is going, how difficult it is to calculate what they expect to see at the time, how it impacts student motivation, student athlete motivation.
Yeah, well, on a broad scale, that does concern me, just because, as we all know, in many instances, when somebody transfers, not all of their credits transfer with them. And in situations where you have athletes transferring multiple times, it decreases the likelihood of them graduating, certainly on time. So that is a concern. With respect to the APR, they have not redone any of that yet. That is still under the current guidelines. I think they may need to. I mean, it may be harder for everybody to keep these numbers. I mean, we all hear about the transfer portal, and we hope that it kind of stabilizes over time. It's still a relatively new entity. This is really about coming up. Will be the third year of it. But the sad thing that happens there is you have a lot of athletes go in the portal naively thinking that there will automatically be a better outcome. And in some cases there are, but in some cases there aren't. And that's the worst situations when somebody, not here, I mean anywhere in the country, when somebody actually has a situation that's probably better than what they think. Maybe they had the wrong people in their ear, or they just didn't stick it out a little bit longer, and they go in the portal, and then they don't end up having another opportunity. So hopefully those instances become less as time goes on. But I think our coaches, here again, they do a great job of just creating a very good culture within their program. And while we have athletes transfer out and while we have athletes transfer in, we have not had the overall number of transfers, and that hasn't impacted us like it has some others. I think just because our athletes, generally speaking, are very happy here.
Thank you. Very good. Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Great seeing those numbers.
Thank you.
Thank you. As all of us are no doubt aware, the Kentucky legislature has been active over the last few weeks, and Jennifer Smith is here today to update us on its impact on higher education.
Good to be home. I've been in Frankfort all week, so it's good to be here. I think most of you all are probably aware of this, but for anyone who is not, so the odd number of years are short sessions, what we call short sessions. So it's 30 working days. Even number of years, long sessions, those are 60 working days, and that's when we, when they do pass the biennial budget. So this is not a budget year. The messages that we were receiving before session started was it's going to be very condensed and there's not going to be a ton of bills filed. There's been 800 bills filed. So, so it's not quite, you know, gone the way we thought it would. But anyways, it's there's a lot going on up there. It's very busy. The session will be over on March 30th. There is a 10-day veto period built in there. So I think we have next week, 2 full weeks left, I believe, before they go into the veto period. So anything that's going to move has to start moving out of its chamber next week, or it's probably not going to have the opportunity to move through. So just wanted to give you just a very brief update on what the President and I have been doing together. He has been in Frankfort with me now, I think, 3 times this session, which is a lot more than I usually try to pull him up here during a short session. But we've done meetings with four times. I block it out. We've had meetings on both the House and the Senate side. They've been great conversations. We've been sharing our story about our retention numbers and all the great work that we're doing here on campus. And so all those meetings, I think, have gone really, really well. And just going ahead and setting us up for the future and where we want to see things go for us in the future. Unfortunately, the President was supposed to have testified yesterday in front of the Budget Review Subcommittee on Post-Secondary Education. So that meeting was canceled because the House Appropriations and Revenue is having a committee hearing at the same time, and you can't have both of those meetings happening at the same time. So we got pushed. So we're waiting to hear if we will have the opportunity to go ahead and do that testimony in these next couple of weeks. All of those meetings were already scheduled and planned for who would be presenting, so I'm not sure that we'll have that opportunity, which is a little disappointing because we had some really great news to share. So so we'll see as that goes. There are a few bills in the House that are pertaining to KEYS scholarship. So that's the scholarship the high school students receive to use for their in-state colleges and universities. There's also a dual credit bill that would be beneficial to all the universities. Those passed out of committee, the House committee, but then they've been reassigned to the House Appropriations and Revenue Committee. And what we're hearing is that anything to do with those scholarships and things like that are probably going to be pushed to next year when it's the budget session. So hopefully maybe we'll see some increased funding for those to help those students. And that also includes the mandatory FAFSA bill, if you all have heard about that. That will probably be pushed to next session as well, if it will even ever be able to be passed. So just a couple things. House Bill 594 passed out of committee last night. That is the regulation of gaming machines. And so our concern with that was esports and all the universities that have robust esports programs. We just wanted to make sure that whatever they did with that was not going to affect our ability to have those esports. And even in committee testimony, it was, they carved out the games at Chuck E. Cheese, you know, like things like that, that you just don't realize when you start looking at that language what all it can affect across the state. And so they did carve that out for us. for all universities. So it should not affect our esports programs at all. But that passed out of the House committee last night. It will head over to the Senate next week, and so I'll just keep an eye on that to make sure none of that changes and that we stay carved out of that. Let's see. So there is a Senate joint resolution 98 that was filed by President Robert Stivers. And what that does is it directs the Council on Post-Secondary Education to do a 25-year look back at higher education. And so from when House Bill 1 was passed in 98. And so it's just to do a look back, make sure that what we're doing in higher education in Kentucky is working, and is then that there don't need, that doesn't need to be any kind of reform or any changes to our system. And so we will continue to monitor that and see how that goes. That did pass out of the Senate committee, so joint resolutions have to go through a committee. It's similar to a bill, except it doesn't go into statute, but it holds the same weight, so to speak, as if it was a piece of a regular bill that was filed. So that has passed out of the Senate Education Committee yesterday, and so I expect that to be over in the House next week as well. So we'll just keep an eye on that one, too. And then probably the two most important resolutions that have been filed is Senate Resolution 114, confirming Regent Brody, and then Senate Resolution 115, which confirms Regent Dennison. And so those have both been filed by Senator Mike Wilson, and so we're very thankful for him doing that. I just want to say we are the first university to have any of our regents or board members to be introduced for confirmation. So I think that's a big win for us. My colleagues were saying, how did you do that? And I was like, just emailed them and reminded them they needed to be confirmed. So anyhow, he's already filed those. And so usually those are not confirmed until like the last couple of days of session when they're waiting on legislation to come between the two chambers. That's when they do a lot of those, what they call kind of housekeeping things. So don't panic. If it's not happened by March 29th, it will happen March 29th or 30th at the latest. So the session will be over on the 30th, and so we will just kind of see how everything lies when we get there. Do y'all have any questions?
Any comments on that trans student bill that they're proposing?
So all of those pieces of legislation right now only affect K-12.
So that doesn't have any impact as far as we're concerned?
No, that's all on the K-12 level. It's all under 18 years old.
Under 18.
Under 18, yes. Yes.
Any other questions?
What's the mandatory FAFSA? What does that have to do with it? I know the form.
Sure.
Yeah.
So for several years now, there has been a bill introduced that would require high school seniors to fill out the FAFSA. The thinking of that some students may not realize that there is money out there. I don't know how much. Kentucky is probably in the top 10, is what I've been told by my counterpart at Kia and Keyflick, that Kentucky's in the top 10 of FAFSA completion in general. But the other numbers that we hear is that there's millions of dollars left on the table from the federal government that students don't realize that they have access to. And so that's always been the push behind doing that.
So Louisiana has been very successful with mandatory FAFSA because if you recall, I've said on several occasions that post-secondary education going rate has gone from 57% to 47% in the Commonwealth, with a declining number of seniors each year. The complexion of that class has shifted in such a way that it's more students who don't typically go to post-secondary education. So Louisiana has compelled every graduating senior to graduate to do the FAFSA. And what that's created is a tremendous leap year over year. In
college fund. And so it's a way to address the challenge we have at the Commonwealth. There are some concerns, around privacy and sharing of information in the federal government. As one of my colleagues has said, the federal government already has almost all of this information on you. It's all in your tax return. And so there's nothing to be paranoid about, but we live in an era where that's paranoia exists. So.
Well, and also there is a piece in that piece of legislation. There's a section with for a waiver. So if anyone remembers the first day of school or first couple days of school, all the papers that come home, the field trip, you know, releases and all those kinds of things that we already have to fill out as parents, that there would also, the idea is that there would also be a waiver that comes home with that. So as you're filling out all these forms for school, you could fill out, no, I don't want my child to do the FAFSA, or yes, I do. So.
And I'll note this, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but one of the benefits for students that want to help reduce their overall level of debt and take an employment position on campus is filling out that form.
Because yes.
Students are eligible for employment on campus once that form is completed, and not eligible if they don't. So it's a benefit where they can reduce their level of debt and get good experience working on campus by filling out the federal student financial aid.
And if you think about the work that we're doing around access and affordability, that you could get more students, and it's a difficult form, and you have to have access to your parents' financial information, and your parents willing to cooperate in that. If we get more students to apply and know that they are actually Pell eligible, $1 in Pell Aid and a 3.0 means WKU will be tuition free for you. That will continue to increase access for all of us. So I think even if we don't get it through legislation, as an institution, we continue to press and with our good K-12 partners to move that forward and get as many people completing it as possible. We go out into the community and do workshops with folks here and support them and do workshops. It's important policy work. It's also important life-changing work for young people who need to get access to that built-up.
As the meeting progresses, my wife's keeping me advised of the weather. George, you're the only person at this meeting that isn't under tornado watch right now, apparently. So, as always, we're glad to have you here, and you may have to finish it yourself.
Related to that, we did ask all classes, which are on Friday afternoons, few and far between, but all classes from 11 o'clock on have been canceled, but we are asking the university community to essentially shelter in place, to stay in these well-constructed buildings that are probably safer than many of our homes if a storm were to come by. There's a team of folks monitoring the weather, and if we need to find a safer space inside the building, they will get us there. But it looks like the most difficult storm will slide just to the north of Bowling Green. Those who wondered why I've been coming and going, that's why I've been in and out a little bit.
All right. Weatherman. All right. And we can segue into our mission statement review.
Absolutely.
I'll
welcome Beth Lobbs back. You will recall we talked about reaffirmation of our accreditation last time, and this is an important part of that process. SACS requires the board on a regular or semi-regular basis to take a look at the mission and be reminded of what our mission statement is. And so Beth's going to walk us through that and help remind us all about WKU's mission.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me again today. This is my job, right? All of the SAC COT, but you've covered quite a few things in your agenda today that are related to our reaccreditation. I appreciate all the work that you all do as part of this. So one of these things, I mean, the Board of Regents, of course, you all are, of course, critical to our university, and you are part of how we will report back to for our reaccreditation. And there's actually a whole section of the 79 standards that are part of So there are, of 79 standards, there's a whole section that's just related to the Board of Regents. Beth and I have been working on already, but part of that is related to the work that you do. We've been reviewing policies, and as we've done some of that today, and also many of our processes. Our writing teams have already started. I know we're a ways out. It's not due until September of 2024, but there's a lot to do, and so we've been working hard on that. Our next and our on-site visit, I wanted to remind you again, because some of you will be involved in that, is in February of 25. And it sounds like it's a long way away, but to me it feels like it's around the corner. So as part of this particular piece, and I appreciate your time, there are two specific standards in the principles of accreditation as part of our reaffirmation for SACS-COC. And the first one is standard 2.1, and it's just, this is one of the core requirements of our accreditation, that we have a standard, and I mean that we have a mission, and these are that's the basic part of the mission. And it addresses teaching and learning, and we're applicable research and public service. So, having said that, now as we work towards making sure that we have everything covered, and not only covered, but documented, right? I mean, you guys all do this work all the time. We want to make sure that we have good documentation of all the things that we do with each client today. So there is another standard, 4.2.A, that says the governing board ensures a regular review of our institution's mission. And so today, I wanted to talk to you just a little bit about that mission and how it fits in our processes. You know, you talked about Bruce today, and Bruce in the strategic planning committee is looking forward. In this accreditation, we're looking backwards, right? We're looking at what we've done in the last 10 years. So, having said that, it's a pretty simple thing that it says, and so, here's our mission, and I will look at that.
We're all familiar with this, the work that we do, but specifically the mission statement guides the entire institution. From that flows the strategic plan, flows the work of the faculty and staff, flows all of the work that we do to try to shape the university and elevate it. And so we prepare students of all backgrounds to be productive, engaged, socially responsible citizen leaders of a global society. We provide research, service, and lifelong learning opportunities for our students, faculty, and other constituents. And we enrich the quality of life for those within our reach. And so a broad mission where we think that every student, faculty, staff, alumnus, community member, donor, supporter can see themselves as an active participant. And it's just a nice reminder of what we do in a way that hits home every time I read.
Like every word counts.
Beth will duly record that the board has reviewed the mission statement as part of our reaffirmation process. There's a little bureaucracy that goes along with it.
Right. Whenever Beth is here, I think of the work she did in getting Western Kentucky University to be one of the forerunners in the online world. And I'm glad you're still engaged and working hard for us.
I actually like this kind of work, so that's been wonderful. I appreciate your time. Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Beth. Thank you. Okay. I do want to mention, too, that every few years the board goes through a little self-assessment process, and we're going to institute that again this next week. Going out I guess Monday, there'll be an email going to all of us from an institutional research firm that will have some questions, comments that allow us to evaluate ourselves as board members, and then later in the year we'll talk about that and review that. Hopefully find ways to make us individually and as a board more effective at the jobs of being regents.
Board self-assessment is also part of the reaffirmation process, so we continue
Imagine
to work our way through.
Coincidence of that.
Yeah.
All right.
I move that the board go into closed session as provided by KRS 61.810, parentheses 1, parentheses closed, for the following discussions. Discussions of proposed or pending litigation against or on behalf of the university.
For those who may be departing, keep your eye on the weather, no kidding, and be careful wherever you're going.
He's going to
stop.
Shaking for the last.
You ready?
Yes.
All right.
Take a motion to go back.
I move we'll go back to open session.
Second.
Have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The board has now returned to open session. The discussions and deliberations during the closed session were restricted to those stated in the motion, and no formal action was taken by the board in closed session. Mr. Steen, buddy, thank you for allowing us to be in your facility today. And I guess there really aren't any other information items.
Mr. Chair, I think we should thank that.
Here, here, yes.
Yeah, compliments to Anthony and Jeff and Beth for pulling off this remote location. That's more complicated on an individual basis than people make it out to be.
Another roadshow.
Before I come back to Buddy, we do have our spring commencement outline here of events. Hopefully everyone can be there. I see a new twist at the end of it. Friday's agenda, we're going to have a little
celebratory
toast. Or
at the, so you all have champagne bookends, I think, or some celebratory bookends. So right before the walk down the hill, we'll have a gathering to get ready for the celebration. And then we talked about this. It always feels weird. Always felt weird to me that at the end of all of this, we just kind of melt away.
Disappear into the ether.
David may have tempted some folks one year, but it was not at the end, it was in the middle. And so I thought, let's have a chance for us to say thank you to each other for being part of the celebration, put an exclamation point on it, or at least a period.